T-Mobile's network can help keep you connected to all your favorite podcasts when you're out and about. Whether you're an early bird looking to dive into a daily news podcast or a night owl who wants to catch up on the latest reality TV drama, T-Mobile will keep you connected on their strong and reliable network. T-Mobile covers more highway miles with 5G than anyone. So if you need great coverage, especially when you're on the go, check out T-Mobile. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/CY. That's SEEWHY.
We miss college football.
Bennett takes the snap and the shotgun, throws for the corner. Brock Bowers one-on-one. Caught! Touchdown! He ate him alive! Falls down into the end zone. Six more for Georgia.
We can't wait for the 2023 season.
Caleb Williams throws the fade in the corner. Oh, God! Touchdown, Trojans!
And we're counting down the days to kickoff.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
I said no.
Are we there yet?
What's wrong with your ears?
Here is your college football fix, only on the Zach Gelb Show.
94 days away from Florida State opening up its football season against LSU in Orlando at Camping World Stadium. And now joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio is a man that's entering his fourth season as the head coach of the Florida State Seminoles. And that, of course, is Coach Mike Norvell. Coach, appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing well, Zach. Appreciate you having me on.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. Last year was a big year for your program in year number three with you being a Florida State Seminole. You guys did go 10-3. I know you want to move on to this season, but first, how do you look back at what your team accomplished last year?
Yeah, I was proud of that group. I mean, to take another step, to show the improvement, you know, even just the way the season went, you know, starting off, you know, 4-0, you know, big win, you know, with against LSU to, you know, one of those kickoff, you know, classics and opportunities just to really, you know, make a statement of who this team was and, you know, some of the things they could accomplish, you know, to have to go on a road, you know, when Jordan went down and, you know, Tate Rodemaker, backup quarterback, came in, led us back, you know, to have a victory on the road. You know, those are some really good things. You know, middle part of the season had some bumps along the way, and you know, but to see our team respond and, you know, win the last six was really big for our program and just for the growth, the you know, like I said, that response and just continuing to get better, pushing towards, you know, what's ahead this year and continuing to build the program back to where it deserves to be. But to have a great group of young men that I get to coach and, you know, excited about, you know, the way this team has come together and really the culture that's been established.
Like you said, there's a lot of excitement with this program and there's big expectations this year. You mentioned the word culture. How do you describe where that culture is at as you guys get set to kick off year four of the Mike Norvell era at Florida State?
Well, no, I think it's in a great place. You know, we've got a lot of people talk about family. I think we live it. I mean, I think this team has really, come together. You know, they work hard together. You know, they push each other. We got a lot of competition. You know, we've had, you know, this last season, we had a good number of guys that, you know, chose to come back and, you know, be a part of this team for another year when they had opportunities to go to the NFL. And, you know, I think that makes a statement in itself, you know, that they enjoy who they get to do it with and who they do it for and, you know, what they get to represent, you know, being Seminoles. And so it's a hard-earned culture, one where, you know, guys, they have to invest into it. But I think we've been able to develop and bring in the right young men that that truly embrace it. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. I love coaching this team and just, you know, the strides that they've taken.
You guys had a lot of success in the transfer portal. How have you guys, I don't want to say perfected that process, but used it as an advantage for your program?
You know, I mean, I think, you know, in today's age of, you know, college football and really college athletics, I mean, you know, it's different than it's ever been. And, you know, being able, everybody has a different path. Everybody has their own journey. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's high school, transfer, junior college. I mean, we're looking for the right fit for Florida State. And, you know, obviously what our roster might need when it comes to experience, competition, you know, continuing to build that in a variety of ways. You know, this last year we signed 65% of our class was from high school, but 35% was from transfers. And, you know, you find guys that, like I said earlier, that embrace the culture, that embrace the opportunity, that want to be a part of this team and how we do it. And that's it's we've done a great job of getting very talented young men that have come in and made an incredible impact on our program. And we've had a few 1 year guys, but something that's been pretty great to see is guys that have had multiple years that have transferred here, and that they really made Florida State their home. And it's really been a special experience in just watching their transition into this program, and just the impact they've been able to make.
One of those guys that has made Florida State their home is Jared Verse. He was at Albany, and then last year had a really good year for you guys, had to deal with some injuries, big expectations for him this season. I was talking to Eric McLean, an ACC analyst and former Clemson center, the other day, and he said, as long as that kid stays healthy, he'll be a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. How did he get on your radar, and what stood out to you about Jared right away?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. He was we were playing Syracuse, 2 years ago, and Jared was playing at Albany, and had a great game. And as we were watching the film, he really just stood out in how he played and what he did. Had a couple of great effort plays, and then fast forward to after the season, I'm sitting there on the road recruiting, and I get a text message that a defensive end from Albany went into the portal. And so I called her defensive coordinator, and I said, "Is this the kid that is this the defensive end that was making all the plays?"
Wow.
When they told me it was, I was on the phone with him within, 15 minutes from that time. And, we started the process, and, just a great young man, plays with a chip on his shoulders, really had to earn everything he's ever gotten. And, he is a special talent, and, a great teammate, and just wonderful, part of our program.
What type of player could he be? Because when I talked to Eric Macklin, he said top 10, that's eye popping. That's big high time praise.
I mean, I think the sky's the limit for him. I think that, you look back at what he was able to do last year, made a lot of great plays, and, really, as they have established himself as one of the top players in college football. But I think when you look at the circumstances that he had to work through, he had some injuries, he missed some time in practice, and just the consistency of the fundamentals that he can apply. I was so proud of him this spring. I thought he was one of our most improved players. And when you say that about a guy who can be, a first-round draft pick and a top pick, it's exciting to see. And it's because of the mindset which he brings to work. It's the investment he's willing to make. And, it's something that, he earns it every day.
Mike Norvell here with us, the head coach of the Florida State Seminoles, will open up their season 94 days from now up against LSU. We all remember that game last year was an absolute great one between LSU and Florida State. Fun to play them again, right? Both these programs really moving in the right direction now. Going to be a good game.
Well, it was a game last year that nobody really knew what to expect. When we kicked it off, but LSU went on and had a great year, won the SEC West. We went on to have a 10-win season, and now to be able to kick off the season, with that game, it's what college football is all about. And we're definitely excited for the opportunity. It's a great opponent, very talented young men that we're going to be able to go against, a great coaching staff that they have. But, it's something our guys are looking forward to, and just continuing to work to get better, and so that we can be prepared when that opportunity shows up.
Mike Norvell, a lot of people talking about your quarterback, Jordan Travis. We know what he was able to accomplish last year. What did he show you last season when he took a big step?
Just such a special playmaker, and he's a wonderful young man. So very humble in his approach and just what he does. But he's grown, he's gotten better. He's really made the 10 guys on the field with him better by how he plays. Throwing the football, the things that we ask him to do. We put a lot on his plate, and whether it's run checks, protections, all those things. He's so very smart, but you see that the playmaking ability that he has, not only with his arms but with his feet, is truly special. And he's another guy that this spring I thought took his game to another level. And you're just excited for what's ahead for him, and just all that he can be, because I truly believe he's one of the elite talents in college football here this next season.
When you have a player that accomplished so much last year, you talk about how he got better in this offseason. What did you guys really challenge him to do when he had such a successful season for you guys a year ago?
Well, you know, it's always about, you know, consistency and execution, and, you know, being able to push that on a daily basis, you know, bringing your championship mindset, you know, to every play. And, you know, you see the growth, you've seen the improvement, you see, you know, what Jordan's capable of. And I thought he played at an extremely high level a year ago, but, you know, just to see that carry over and to have that, that sense of urgency to be better. And you know, he's really done a great job with that. Just you'll play in and play out. You know, not every play is going to be perfect, but when you're striving and pushing yourself to be in the best that you can, I mean, it's impressive to see. And you know, he's really taken, you know, his control and command of this offense, and you know, just the leader that he is. I think he's done a remarkable job.
Your running back, Trey Benson, you guys got him from Oregon. Last year, he put up nearly 1,000 yards, had like four 100-yard rushing games, and had 9 rushing touchdowns for you. Another year in your program, what do you think he could continue to get better on with Trey Benson, your running back?
Well, you know, Trey was coming off of, really a devastating injury there at Oregon. And, you know, he had to come, and as he came into the program, you know, had a great plan for him. You know, he really built his confidence, you know, through the work that he had. And, I thought he performed at a very high level throughout the course of the season. But, you know, he's just, you know, he's ready to take another step in his game. And I think that you have just the confidence that he's been able to grow in, you know, just the understanding of what he's being asked to do and how well he can do, you know, all things is exciting for us. And, you know, really think he's going to be a special player.
You've talked about some of your top players and how you think they've got better. Who's been some guys during this offseason program and leading into spring ball right before that spring game that you thought really took their game to the extra level this offseason?
You know, I mean, I think you're looking at position groups, you know, our offensive line group has really done a great job. I mean, just their size, their strength, you know, the execution of what they've done. We've got a lot of guys that are returning, but also we're able to bring some very talented newcomers into the program. And you're just seeing the overall depth that we have and the competition on a day in and day out basis. I mean, I think that group is really poised to take some wonderful strides. And then really the forcing unit on our defense, they are the same thing. I mean, we've got some really talented young men. I know you talked about Jared, but, you know, guys like Pat Payton, you know, our linebacker crew, our defensive tackle. It's impressive. And, you know, obviously the more pressure that we can create, I mean, it just helps those guys in the back end. And, you know, it's a very experienced secondary we have. So, you know, I think it's a well-rounded team. It's one that, you know, we've got to continue to fight for that improvement daily. But, you know, it's an exciting team to be around. And, you know, like I said, it's one that I enjoy coaching because of the way that they work.
Yeah, you talk about that environment and trying to get Florida State back, and last year was a big step in the right direction. I know the world was completely different when you walked in there 2020 taking this big job coming over from Memphis, but when you look at the last 3 years where you guys were in 2020 to now, does it just look like a totally different program?
I mean, it's, you know, we've had to go through a lot, and you know, it's one of those things. Sometimes you need to go through what you have to prove you can get through, and you know, that's what we've kind of done as a program. We needed to establish our foundation. We needed to establish a culture and really build upon that, you know, through our values of how we try to operate. And I think players have embraced that. We've had to be consistent, you know, as coaches and trying to be that example for them and do it with them. And you know, it's just it's something I'm really, really excited about. You know, not only are guys showing the success on the field, but you know, who they are off the field, what they're doing in the classroom, you know, how they're achieving at a high level there. It's just, you know, it's something to be proud of, but, you know, also the opportunity to continue to go get better. And, you know, that standard of excellence is something that has been consistent around Florida State for a long time. And, you know, it truly has been a program that was a blueprint for so long of how to sustain success. And, you know, we've seen some great moments, but we're ready to take it to another level and continue to push to get better in all things that we're doing.
Well, what are Mike Norvell's expectations for this squad this year?
To get better. I mean, I know I've said it a few times throughout even this interview, but I mean, it's something that we talk about daily. Is that I believe in the talent, I believe in the young men that I get to coach. I'm not going to put any limits on what they can accomplish, but for us to go get better, being our best, and then if we can do that, then I think great things can occur. And we don't control all factors that go on around us, but we do control what we do inside this building and the investment we're willing to make. So if we can push and hold that standard and focus on our improvement, I think great things will come.
This feels like an ACC championship or bust type of season. Do you agree with that?
I mean, ultimately for us, if we go out there and we continue to improve and we play to the best of our ability, then I think we can put ourselves in a great position for all things. And, that is the focus. And, we've had high expectations here within our program, just with what we talk about as players, as coaches. And this is a program we should be competing for championships, with the young men I get to coach. So, I mean, I'm excited for the opportunity that's ahead. And, we got to go improve and be consistent in how we show up and what we do on a daily basis.
The last few years, there was a lot of pressure in order to prove that you could move this in the right direction to keep your job. Now you welcome in the better pressure of trying to win games with this program being in a more positive spot. Just how do you and the program deal with the pressure of having high expectations this year?
Well, I mean, if you don't embrace expectations, you should never come to Florida State. A player, coach, or anybody involved, this is a special place. And, there's no expectations or pressure that comes from the outside that's not, more than what we have here on the inside. And, this program's not for everybody, but it's for the right ones that embrace the opportunity to be on a grand stage and to be able to represent a wonderful university and program that, like I said, that standard of excellence. And that's what we push for. We've had a challenging road, and it's been interesting, getting to this point, but, it's been a part of a journey that we had to go on. And, I'm really proud of the players that have been a part of it. The guys we've been able to bring in, and, I'm excited about, what the future holds because of who I get to do it with.
Coach Mike Norvell, always appreciate your time. Good luck this season. Thanks for doing this.
All right, thanks so much, and go Noles.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Coast to coast on CBS Sports Radio. I saw via Brent McMurphy that the SEC, the great debate is over. The SEC will play an 8-game league schedule in 2024 with no divisions. That is what Brent McMurphy is reporting, and it was confirmed by the SEC commissioner in Greg Sankey. Remember, right around the corner, you have Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC. So the question of how many conference games and divisions and how the schedule is going to be made up, and they're still going to look at rivalries and things like that. It's going to be 8 league games in 2024 with no divisions. Now, Hickey, I see that you're bitching all around the studio today about this. What's your big gripe with going for 8 league games with the SEC for future years?
Because you're keeping 4 crap games and you're putting 2 big-time teams in your conference, and you're never going to see them.
Is this just you being an SEC hater? And
no.
You being jealous of the SEC being a huge Big Ten honk?
No, not at all. This is like this. Would you rather, let me ask you this, as a neutral fan, would you rather see Alabama take on Oklahoma, or would you rather watch Alabama take on Mercer?
But that's not how it always, for example, I'd much rather see Alabama play Oklahoma. Totally get
Agreed.
That. But there's not going to, with 12 games being played, they're not going to schedule all stud opponents. Like the Big Ten, Penn State plays what? Delaware this year? And I'm looking at their schedule right now. They also play UMass.
Yeah, they also play 9 conference games.
So you're putting up a big stink because the Big Ten plays 1 extra conference game when the SEC is a better
Big
conference.
Big 12, Pac-12. No, this is not about me. This is about the fans. Like, the coaches talk about, let's get fans in the stadium. Let's get fans watching. Let's grow the game. No one wants to, in any league, it's not just this is an SEC thing. No one in college football wants to watch these beatdowns every single Saturday of Alabama taking on Mercer or Penn State taking on Delaware. No one wants to watch that. No one is excited and looking forward to seeing those games. And at least if you are now going to a 9-game SEC schedule, sure, some of those cupcakes are still going to stay around. Every conference does it, but it's less. It's now you're all of a sudden moving past the Mercers, no disrespect to them, and now you're putting some big-time matchups on your slate and getting people to watch the games and be excited, and that, to me, is why that's bad for the sport of staying to eight. Currently, at least, it's, you know, it's not like this is going to be forever. It's,
but here's why your math doesn't always necessarily line up. Here's why your math doesn't always necessarily line up.
Why is that?
And why it's not a big deal, eight or nine. Look at last year with Michigan. Michigan's first three games were Colorado State, Hawaii, and UConn. I know UConn ended up having a good season, but at the time, UConn was viewed as Cupcake U, and Michigan beat them 59-0.
Right.
So those are three cupcake games right there.
Right.
With your great nine Big Ten conference schedule games, it's not like you really ever tuned into a Michigan game and were wondering in the Big Ten play, oh, is this game really going to be that big outside of the Ohio State game last year?
Would you rather watch Michigan-Iowa, or would you rather watch Michigan take on Northwest Alabama State?
With the Iowa offense, game. I don't think it really matters all that much.
It's hard, even for bad conference teams, it's still a lot harder to beat a conference opponent than it is some of these brutal bye games that happen where you're paying a school $1 million to go kick their ass for 3 hours.
I'm not saying it's enjoyable, but you make it seem as if just because you add an extra conference game that it's going to be that much better. Sure, if you get the creme de la creme team in the conference going up against another big team in the conference, if you weren't going to get that matchup that year, yes, 100% I'm with you. But when you get a big top dog in the conference up against a bottom feeder, it doesn't really move the needle for me that much.
Well, it's 16 games that would have been removed for unwatchability that now are unfortunately staying on the schedule.
You say that all the time, and then there's some moments where you see Cupcake U, as we just saw this past year, get the better end of some of these schools. We had some big upsets this year.
The Cupcakes are—they're still on the schedule. They're not leaving. But again, it's would you rather have an extra fourth game of let me just crush this team, or would you actually play a conference game? And sure, maybe you'll have on the schedule because everyone released it. Maybe you'll have Alabama taking on Oklahoma in 2024. But you're not going to get it then often if they stay with this eight-game conference schedule when you have 16 teams in the league. You're going to get these schools playing once every 5 years. Who wants that? No one wants that.
I think the difference over one game is very minuscule, in my opinion. Anyway, SEC odds right here. If I take Georgia out of it, because Georgia is right now minus 110 to win the SEC, who would you then pick? Who do you think is the second best team in the SEC this year? And remember, the divisions are not split this year. There's still divisions. Let me clarify that. It's the next year where there's no divisions and you get rid of divisions.
LSU. They're the second best team. They have an established quarterback. Brian Kelly obviously showed you he's a really good head coach. They have better skill talent than Alabama.
I like Jaden Daniels a lot.
This team, I think, is poised now to not get off to a bad start that did last year. I think they'll repeat as SEC West champs.
You look at Alabama, it's so tough to figure out what Alabama's going to be this year. Because you get rid of Will Anderson, and you get rid of Bryce Young as well, off to the NFL, with Bryce Young now being the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, and Will Anderson being an edge rusher, along with C.J. Stroud, who was a quarterback at Ohio State, getting drafted 2 and 3 to the Houston Texans. Alabama last year, when you looked at the roster, especially in the offensive side of the ball, they didn't really give you anything outside of Jahmyr Gibbs that intimidated you a whole lot. And Milroe is fine. I keep on seeing some highlights of him throughout the offseason, but those are highlights in the offseason. I do think for the first time in a while, it does feel like heading into a football season that it's not a foregone conclusion that heading into the year Alabama's definitely going to be in the SEC championship game. Now, when you're saying who's the second best team in the SEC, Hickey, let me just ask you this. If let's just say they got rid of divisions this year and it was just the two best teams in the conference, would your answer still be LSU? Because right now LSU is in the opposite conference or the opposite division of Georgia.
Yes. Regardless of divisions, it's to me Georgia 1, LSU 2.
And then would you still put Alabama 3, or do you go the system with Tennessee? With Milton now as the quarterback, we'll see if the kid Nico ends up playing, who's a 5-star recruit. Is there any other teams that you would consider there? putting in front of Alabama. Third. Yeah.
I give Nick Saban the respect. Like, Ole Miss is always a fun team. They can never win actually a big game. Tennessee, like I said, they've lost a lot. I still think they'll be solid and good, but they lost a lot of offensive production last year. And I'll give Saban the benefit of the doubt of doing a better job at rebuilding his offense than Josh Heupel right now.
Yeah, with Cedric Tillman no longer there and also Jalin Hyatt as well, in addition to the quarterback in Hendon Hooker. Now, I kind of want to see your head explode right now, and I think that you're just going to lose it here because I know that you can't stand this guy, and I call James Franklin an overrated coach, which he is. This guy is definitely, though, an overrated coach. Did you see who had the fourth highest odds here to win the SEC at plus 1,200?
The definition of insanity.
Jimbo Fisher.
Texas A&M.
Connor Wigman's going to win the Heisman, right?
Jeez. If you put your money down on that, just donate it. Just send it to us at CBS Sports Radio. Flush it down the toilet. Donate to someone on the street. Like, don't. If you're gonna throw away $100, at least make someone else's day. Don't just throw it and give it to Vegas as a free, basically, donation.
CeeLo, your kids have a birthday coming up.
Oh, forget my kids. We could use an influx of cash around these parts. You know what I mean?
Well, get a few pizzas or something like
something,
that.
Anything.
Get a few confident people in the newsroom.
I've got a mouse and a keyboard that aren't exactly working great right now. Perhaps we could replace those.
But you're a professional. You are. Put it this way.
Sometimes.
You're like Bryce Young at Alabama last year, where it doesn't matter what's around you, you're still going to perform really damn well.
Got to do your job.
All right, Belichick.
Just do your job. Do your job.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. So I'll give you the odds to win the SEC. Georgia's at minus 110. Bama's at plus 240. LSU plus 450. A&M plus 1,200. Tennessee plus 1,400. Auburn plus 4,000. Ole Miss plus 4,000. Hickey, can I give you a dark horse here?
Let's hear it.
I'm not going to, like, I don't think this team obviously is going to win the SEC. But what are your thoughts on South Carolina entering this season? I like Beamer a lot as a coach. And you get Spencer Rattler back, who started to cook at the end of last season.
That's
now, new
thing.
Offensive coordinator with Dow Loggins, who was the Jets offensive coordinator, as Marcus Satterfield is off with Matt Rule to Nebraska with their long connection. So now Dow Loggins is going to be the OC at South Carolina.
And Shane Beamer is a big fan of Dow Loggins. Went on a very passionate rant defending the hiring of Dow Loggins.
Didn't
I think,
he get into a big kerfuffle with, who's the dude on the weekends?
Mark Ryan.
Mark Ryan here at CBS Sports Radio, where Beamer, I guess Ryan had some report that they didn't actually want Dow Loggins or he wasn't the first choice. And then Beamer just basically took a blowtorch to one Mark Ryan and created a big time war in those neck of the woods.
That he did. I'm not going to buy in just because, like you said, they did play really well
the last
month. I'm
saying it's a dark horse.
But I right now with what we've seen, I will not trust Spencer Rattler for a full 12-game season. Oh,
so who's your dark horse? Like, Georgia's at minus 110. That's the favorite. Bama's then plus 240. LSU's plus 450. So take those three teams out of it. Do you go back to the well with Tennessee at plus 1,400? But is Tennessee considered a dark horse after what they were able to accomplish last season?
Well, if you consider them a dark horse, that would be my team. If not, I mean, now we're getting into the woods a little, you know, trickier. If you want to talk real dark horse here, I'll buy into Lane Kiffin then and Ole Miss in the sense that a team that
plus 4,000
is low on the odds that could, again, win 9-10 games and maybe just come November be in the mix to make the SEC title game. I'll go Ole Miss.
No love for your favorite coach and Hugh Freeze and being on back in the SEC with Auburn?
I am intrigued. Year one, I'm going to say 4,000, no, but I'm very intrigued with Hugh Freeze. I think he will have success.
Now, let me ask you one more here, just when we're in the college football conversation. If I tell you Georgia is not going to win the national championship, with right now they're plus 225 to win the national championship and make it back-to-back-to-back titles, who would you then take? The second team here is Alabama. You already told me you don't think Alabama's the second-best team in the SEC. I think it's very close between them and LSU, and I've said before on this show, for the next 5 years, if you're going to make me predict who are the three best coaches in college football, it's Kirby Smart, it's Nick Saban, and then it's Brian Kelly. So there's a little LSU love from both of us. You have Ohio State at plus 600, Michigan at plus 1,000, USC to win it all plus 1,400, LSU plus 1,600, and then you have Clemson and Florida State at plus 1,800. I'll just give this team a little bit of love here. I actually give these three teams a little bit of love just because they're grouped together in the same odds. You have Penn State, Texas, and Notre Dame at plus 2,500. Now, I do remember a video of you being very intoxicated, walking out of the Rose Bowl. No big deal, no big deal, in a game that really was not a big deal at all between Penn State and Utah, guaranteeing that Drew Aller and the Penn State Nittany Lions, led by overrated, can't-win-a-big-game James Franklin, are going to get to the college football playoff. So if you think that's the case and we take Georgia out of the conversation, you got to like the odds of your Penn State Nittany Lions there if you want to talk about giving away money.
I don't love the fact that they're with Texas. The total fraudsters at Texas is every year. Keep them far away.
You call Texas frauds. Is your university this great standard for college football these days?
And they've been very consistently winning program. Yeah. Knock on the door. Let's go.
A consistently winning program?
They've been a lot better than Texas.
I know, but can I get the definition?
10 wins a year, New Year's Six games. Since 2016, so what is that, 70 years for the most part, they've always in the mix.
They're the third wheel in that conference, pretty much.
When you're winning 10, I mean,
and not always necessarily the third wheel.
When you're winning 10 games a year, still impressive. Eh. Not elite, not championship level.
No one's ever shaken in their, and Penn State is a good team this year, but no one's been shaking in their boots about Penn State the last few years.
Well, 2016 could have been, 2017.
Going back to 2016, we were graduating college, my friend.
We're talking about consistency of a program that's been in the mix, relevant for, was that 7-8 years now? They're right there. Second tier program.
As he's wearing a Roar Lion shirt, I'll just point out.
I'm not being biased. I think second tier is absolutely fair, and a lot of objective.
Yeah, because we all aspire to be second tier in college football.
I'm not saying I'm happy there. I'm just saying that the last, 5-10 years, that's where they've been, and I'm trying to break down the door. I'm knocking on it myself personally, knock on the door of that championship elite level. No one's answered. I'm hoping this is a year that someone does open the door, welcome on in. But
so answer the question. Outside
Michigan,
of Georgia.
USC. There were two choices.
Say that again?
Michigan and USC.
Ah. Now, USC Michigan's doesn't play legit. A lick of defense, but no. That was my answer to Michigan. Even though the last 2 years, the semifinal game has not worked out for them. They got blown out against Georgia 2 years ago in Miami. And then this past year, TCU, man, what a rough start that was for the Wolverines. And they ended up losing that game. But with Michigan having Donovan Edwards, Blake Corum back, and you have J.J. McCarthy as well, and you saw how quickly they were able to replace those names on defense after losing Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson from 2 years ago and how good their defense was this year. There's no doubt about it there for me. It may actually end up being Michigan, which I was not expecting you to say that because I know this. Death, taxes, Hickey being a Penn State homer, and also Hickey hating Michigan.
I mean, I hate Michigan, but I'll call it like I see it. They are a legit team this year. In terms of winning a national title, they're an absolutely legit team.
So let me then ask you this. Who is, what are you happy with Penn State? What do you think Penn State's going to do this year? Because then you can't say they're going to win the Big Ten if you just told me Michigan has a great chance to win a national championship.
I think they can go 11-1. Beat Ohio State. I think their season is going to come down to Michigan at home, middle of November.
Is that game
at Penn State?
Is that at the Horseshoe this year at Ohio State?
Yes, at Ohio State.
And does Michigan play at Penn State this year, right?
Yes.
Because you guys got destroyed last year in the Big House.
In the Big House. Back home, on your home field, stupid big noon kickoff, which is just,
Oh, is it really?
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
When is that late in the year?
Yes.
November what? You know?
12th. I'm just guessing. It's somewhere in that range.
Gotcha. That's a noon game?
Noon game.
That could be a little bit of a road trip. We leave right after the show. We'll drive to Happy Valley. I'll get us the tickets. We'll be chilling with the AD, Pat Kraft, and maybe we go a little Penn State-Michigan game.
And that could be
we'll
the biggest.
We'll invite Hackenberg, my main man, Christian Hackenberg.
Could be the
show.
Biggest Penn State home game in 25 years, maybe.
But your program has been at this great level.
Well, I'm saying they play a lot of their tough games on the road. They've gotten situations where for some of the big wins, or some of the later in the season games,
you know how I know you think that's going to be a really big game? Because you didn't automatically reject my invite to go to the game with me, where you usually tell me I'm not allowed anywhere near that campus. The fact that you didn't reject that out of the gate.
That is very true, by the way.
So you think that's going to be a big game.
I think 25 years, this is the biggest Penn State home game we'll see in a long time. Possibly. Hopefully.
In a long time.
I'm knocking on wood. I just knocked on wood. For those out there superstitious, I am.
Well, you are the creator of the Hickey Hack.
Hopefully, it's 9-0 versus 9-0. Maybe the match of the century. Let's go. century, CeeLo. We're talking big time here.
There's people ahead of right now in now. SEC territory listening and saying, who is this, this producer? He's the dumbest person in America.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
It is The Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I don't know, in recent memory, if there's ever been a story that is just such a non-story that people are making a story. And I'm not talking about like in the actual world. I'm just talking about in the sports world where people are trying to make something a story that's clearly not a story, more than this Tom Brady potentially playing for the Las Vegas Raiders. Now, I did read from Mike Florio. Originally it was thought, and Brady's going to be a minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, that if he wanted to play, he would need all 32 votes from the owners to end up playing as well. It's actually just 24 votes that he would need. He would need 24 out of the 32 owners to say, yes, we would let you to play. And Hickey, I don't even see if, how there's a way, when this guy has kicked a lot of these, almost every team in the league's ass for the last 20 years, how 24 owners would then say, yeah, let's have you be a minority owner and also play for the Las Vegas Raiders, even though Brady's, what, 45, 46 years old to begin with, and he's older, and he did not have this great season last year. But if he went to go play for the Raiders, you know, he got Devontae Adams there, and you're playing in a dome, like, Brady could go toss the football around and still put up some big-time numbers, one would think. Now, you're in a brutal division with the Chiefs and the Chargers, and we'll see if the Broncos can find the way to bounce back this season, now bringing Sean Payton into town. But I don't see how you would get 24 owners to give you a thumbs up on this one.
And why would any owner, let's just say just in the AFC alone, approve that? It's an upgrade, like I said, even though he's older, still an upgrade and puts more fear into the minds of fans and teams, Tom Brady, that is, compared to Jimmy G. Like, why would you bail the Raiders out and give them or allow them the opportunity to upgrade a quarterback and you approve it? Makes no sense. Why any team outside of the Raiders would say, yeah, let's do it. What the hell?
Now, I don't know if Brady is promoting something now. I'm sure he is with his TB12 and the Brady brand boxers or whatever he's been putting out these days with all the clothing. I did see a TB12 truck the other day roaming around my New York City apartment, which I've never seen that before. I know Brady has an apartment here in New York City, but I've never seen a TB12 truck. So I'm sure he's promoting something. I didn't listen to all these interviews today, but I did see he was making the rounds today, just so convenient enough with his name in the news. Before we play that clip, did you at all find that interesting that Brady was making the rounds today when his name is very much in the news with all this speculation about maybe him coming back and playing if Jimmy Garoppolo? And that's the other part that makes this a non-story. The Raiders knew Jimmy G had a foot injury, put an addendum in his contract so they could get out of it, but it quickly goes away the moment Jimmy G plays a game, one game this season, passive physical, plays one game, and there's no further damage to that foot. So they put some protections in there, but at this point, when you did go through with the contract, I don't think the Raiders are expecting this to actually play a factor in them getting rid of the Jimmy G contract, not even a year into it. Pretty much is what I'm saying.
To quote Josh McDaniels, I have no anxiety.
I love that quote.
So that shows you that, yes, he is not worried about this foot surgery.
Actually, do me a favor. Play me that Josh McDaniels cut. Here is Josh McDaniels when he was asked about his concern level with Jimmy G's foot surgery.
I have no anxiety. I'm not going to put a timeline or a day on anything, but like I said, I have no anxiety. I have very good information that, you know, would tell me that, you know, we're going to be fine. You know what I mean? So, again, that's nothing has happened that would have changed that. Okay? So, that's why I feel that way.
Now, I know you can't stand Josh McDaniels, Hickey, but you actually do believe Josh McDaniels there.
Oh, 100%. Like I said, the Raiders made this contract and, like, reworked it because they knew about it. It wasn't like, oh, wow, Jimmy G showed up and said, hey, guys, by the way, I know I just signed the contract. I need surgery. They're not dumb.
Former CBS Sports Radio host Robin Lundberg, who is now with Sports Illustrated, he interviewed Tom Brady today, and TB12 said he is not playing in the NFL again.
I'm certain I'm not playing again, so I've tried to make that clear, and I hate to continue to profess that because I've already told people that lots of times, but I'm looking forward to my my broadcasting job at Fox next year. I'm looking forward to the opportunity ahead with the Raiders, and we're in the process of that, along with the other different things that I'm a part of professionally.
That's some funky web TV background music there. Makes it sound like Tom Brady's in a club when they're interviewing him. One thing I'll call BS on with Tom Brady, you have not said multiple times that you're never playing again. Like, even right after you retired, you wouldn't even fully say no, and you would never say never when you were talking to Colin Coward, I believe is who he did the interview with at the time.
And even, I think it was later on at a conference in Miami, talking about the Dolphins. Hey,
yeah,
Tom, would
right.
you come back and play? And the first words out of his mouth were not, no.
It's like, I have a lot of respect for people around there, something that he said.
I root for the Dolphins, a lot of friends on that team. Right, he danced around it, talked about the Dolphins glowingly, but never shot it down.
Now, I will say the fact that we heard Brady say that he's done and then also talk about this Fox gig, that makes me believe him more than ever because we haven't really heard that being said before.
That was another rumor, too, that he was not going to do the Fox deal and maybe getting some cold feet about doing the Fox deal.
That either means two things. One, we're both dead wrong on this. Or two, he just wants to put all this speculation to bed about Fox and also returning and just on the record say that's what's happening. He's not returning, and then also he's going to be broadcasting for Fox a year from now, which is the plan.
Well, if you're Tom Brady, too, everyone's talking about you, and if you think it's false, just, hey, here's my words. I'm going to squash everything right now.
That's a guy, for the most part, for 20-something years that ignored the noise. I don't really think he cares about the noise right now. I would imagine, I don't know what he was promoting today, but whatever he was promoting is why he did the interview.
Well, I would say, you got a lot more time now. Easy to block out the noise when you're buried in film. Where's the distraction now?
And Giselle's not bugging you anymore because you guys got divorced.
Right. So he has a lot of time to listen and hear things.
It is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We'll preview the NBA Finals and some other happenings around the NBA with Rick Kamla when we return 5 minutes from now.